The NACA had an amazing ability to attract talent. And I think much of the credit for this actually rests with the first director of research of the NACA, the guy who ran the day-to-day operations of the NACA, not the committee, but the actual working staff, right? And his name was George Lewis, first director of research. Lewis had a really keen eye for talent, and he knew that to attract some of the top aeronautical thinkers and builders of the age, he could offer people a chance to work on challenging problems, use top-notch equipment, and then also let them have some freedom to pursue interesting lines of inquiry. So with that, he was able to relatively easily entice top talent from schools and occasionally from industry to the NACA. And Lewis was relentless in tracking down people, and he had a very wide-roving eye. For example, he brought a guy by the name of Max Munk, Dr. Max Munk, to the United States from Germany in the early 1920s. And this is an interesting case because Max Munk, brilliant guy, he was not cut out to be a manager, though, and they brought him in to be a manager. So his career at the NACA was relatively short, but he was absolutely critical to the early success at Langley. In fact, that variable density wind tunnel I showed you earlier, right, he's the guy who designed that. Right? He also was behind the propeller research tunnel, the second really important breakthrough tunnel at Langley. And that was the facility in which the NACA won its first Collier Trophy of the five that it won during the lifetime of the NACA up until 1958. But here's the interesting thing. Getting Munk to work at the NACA was a huge challenge because, you see, Munk had served in the German military during World War I. And even getting him into the United States wasn't easy. But having the US government hire a former enemy combatant, well, that actually required special dispensation from the President of the United States. And Lewis went and made that happen, and Munk became the key to putting the NACA on the map in aeronautics. Another one of the keys were these great theoretical minds of aeronautics. I mentioned some of those folks. One of those guys was a guy named Theodor Theodorsen. He was from Norway. Lewis got him to move to the United States to come work for the NACA. George Lewis also hired this guy. Right, some of you may be familiar with him. Lewis asked Fred Weick to come to the NACA to work on his newfangled propeller research tunnel. He told him that we need somebody to work in a tunnel, and Fred agreed to do that. It turns out that he was actually hiring Fred to run the tunnel, and Fred didn't know that until actually he got there for the job. But his work as the first director of the propeller research tunnel of 1927, 1928 is what won the NACA the Collier Trophy. And not for a breakthrough about propellers, as you might think from the propeller research tunnel, but actually for the cowling that went around the engine behind the propeller, the famous NACA cowling, which really put NACA on the world map in terms of being at the cutting edge of technology and producing an immediate social benefit for the country, because the NACA cowling increased speeds and reduced fuel consumption dramatically for airplanes all across the country. It was immediately adopted by aircraft manufacturers all over the country. Now, Weick didn't stick around at the NACA very long and went on to do other things and made considerable fame in aeronautics, for example, designing the AirCoop. And you'll see a lot of them here at AirVenture this year because we're, of course, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the design of the AirCoop. But there are plenty of other NACA employees deserving of mention. And I feel kind of guilty not mentioning them by name because there really weren't that many. I suppose I could probably stand here and read you the names of the several hundred people who work for NACA, but we won't do that because what I want to do is emphasize here that while the NACA was a small organization and made these huge breakthroughs, grew slowly, by 1939 there were only a total just over 500 employees at Langley Research Center. But it was an incredible group of folks who were able to do amazing things because folks like Fred Weick and others were there doing research that couldn't be done anywhere else and changing the world of aeronautics as we know it. Now, when World War II was on the horizon, George Lewis was also one of the key players in the expansion of the NACA from one facility in Virginia, what was called at the time the Langley Memorial Aeronautical Laboratory, to three major research labs, one in California, the one that's now called the Ames Research Center, and another in Cleveland, Ohio, known as now as the Glenn Research Center. Though I do have to mention that the Cleveland facility was actually named after George Lewis when he passed away in 1948. But you'll hear more about the contributions of the Glenn Research Center shortly from my colleague here on the table. So I'd like to make one more point about the NACA. It'll take a couple slides, so hang on with me here. A fundamental change happens in the NACA at World War II, right? And it's critical to our future space, but it's one that most people don't know much about and hasn't been noticed much. Because World War II made the NACA much, much bigger in facilities, staff, budget, by almost any measure you could take. Right? And the NACA made a huge contribution to the war effort. Every aircraft that flew in the war was tested in NACA wind tunnels. They did what they call cleanup testing that reduced the drag on all those aircraft, and they increased the range and or speed of almost all those aircraft by at least some percentage points. And that had a huge impact on the war effort, giving us a critical edge over our Axis air forces. But much of that work was actually done at the classified level, and this decrease in openness was a big change for the NACA, because the NACA had previously done everything pretty much in wide open. And they published all the results, and they were freely available to the world. In fact, some of those results wound up in Axis aircraft that we wound up facing in World War II. But the upshot of all these changes is that during World War II, this different relationship with industry and with the government, particularly the military, one of the things that changed was what the NACA was researching. And after the war, after the after George Lewis retired just before passing away, he basically worked himself to death during the war. But under the guidance of his successor, Dr. Hugh Dryden, the NACA wound up redefining how we would get to and from space, among other things that they did. Now, what do I mean by redefining how we get to and from space? Well, even into the 1950s, this is what people imagined spaceships would look like, right? Sleek, pointy things that fly in and out of the atmosphere with no trouble at all. Now, this particular picture happens to be a Chesley Bonestell painting from the mid-1950s. But even a century before that, when Jules Verne was writing about a trip around the moon, his spaceship was a sleek, pointy, artillery shell sort of shaped thing that, of course, returned to the Earth point first because that was the fastest way to get back and had the least drag. At least that was the thinking, right? In the early decades of the 20th century, we all became familiar with Buck Rogers, who had this snazzy spaceship that had wings and pointy things, and it flew into the atmosphere and smoothly landed on a runway or on a landing pad someplace. Of course, we now all know that that's not how it turned out. You don't have pointy things coming into the atmosphere. Instead, spacecraft look like this. Now, this picture happens to be an artist's conception of the reentry of the new Orion spacecraft during Exploration Flight Test 1 back at the end of last year, right? Spaceships, as we now know them, don't fly into the atmosphere on sleek, pointy wings with the pointy end first. Even the space shuttle, which had wings, was blunt all over, and it came in with its belly forward. Why? Because of this guy, right? An NACA researcher named Harvey Allen, he came up with a really counterintuitive idea in 1952. Now, the NACA had a reputation for kind of counterintuitive ideas and doing strange things, and this one was a doozy. Because Allen had been working on missile warhead research. Remember I said that there's a lot more secret stuff going on at NACA. This is one of the things they collaborated with the military on, ballistic missile warhead research. And he noticed that these pointy warheads that they were trying to get come back through the atmosphere tended to melt and burn up on their way in. And Allen began to wonder what would happen if you used a blunt shape instead of a pointy shape instead. And in fact, they did wind tunnel tests, as you can see in the picture, he's standing next to a model. Actually, this picture was staged in 1957 when they declassified his research. So 1952 is still classified, but they found out in wind tunnel tests that the blunt shape would produce a shock wave ahead of itself, and that much of the heat of reentry would be dissipated or pushed around the shape by that shock wave. Now, my point here in talking about Harvey Allen and the blunt body theory of things is not to sing the praises of Harvey Allen, although he certainly deserves them. He's a brilliant guy. But it's the note that in 1952, when he did this work, the NACA, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, was actually already becoming a space agency. The NACA had gotten into launching rockets from the Virginia coast after the war to do high-speed aeronautic research they couldn't do in wind tunnels. They couldn't do supersonic research in wind tunnels because the shock waves kept bouncing off the inside of the tunnels. They eventually figured that one out and got a Collier Trophy for that one, by the way. John Stack, who figured out how to make a wind tunnel be able to run supersonic and not reflect those shock waves back onto your target. At the time in 1946, they weren't sure they were going to be able to sort that out, so they started building rockets and launching them from what's now the Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia to do high-speed aeronautics research. And then instrument these little airplane shapes that they put on the end of these rockets that they'd launch off the coast of Virginia. By the early 1950s, when Harvey Allen, for example, in 1952, came up with this breakthrough idea, about 10% of all research being done at the NACA was rocketry or space-related. And by the time Sputnik flew in 1957, 25% of all research at the NACA was already on rocketry or space topics. So in many ways, the NACA was a space agency long before it was given that mandate and converted into NASA after the Sputnik crisis in 1958. So that's how the NACA, an aeronautics research organization, helped to set the stage for the exploration of space. Now I'm delighted to hand the stage over to my friend and NASA colleague, David DeFelice.
Switch presentation modes here and get started. So thank you very much, Bill. That's very insightful, and want to get started here. If I could have the monitor showing what we have, I want to make sure you guys are seeing what I'm seeing here, and we can get started. And you guys seeing my projection yet?
No.
Don't know if we have too many windows open. What I want to do is make sure yours is out of projection mode, I think is what we need to do. Technology. There we go. Let's see if we do that. And I'm going to close it out since we're done. Here we go. It was opening too many windows. Sorry,
what happens when you follow a historian. They mess up the hardware for you, the software.
Sorry, it's not a Mac.
So you get Journey to Mars up there now, David.
And we thought we had this all wound up really good, and it looks like not. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to reload the presentation, and it'll take a moment to do that. All right, so what we're going to do is take a little bit of a step back and... Okay, good. Very good. Let me just start you out with a little, just a little video introduction to welcome you here.